Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Katrina After the Flood by Gary Rivlin is a journalistic nonfiction account of Hurricane Katrina and its long aftermath in New Orleans. Drawing on Rivlin's on-the-ground reporting for the New York Times, interviews, trial transcripts, government records, newspaper coverage, and other documentary sources, the book examines not only the storm's physical destruction, but also the deeper social and political damage that followed. Its central concern is how recovery unfolded in a city shaped by poverty, racial segregation, weak institutions, and competing visions of redevelopment. Rather than treating Katrina as a single catastrophic event, Rivlin presents it as a long crisis of governance, inequality, and public decision-making. The book is especially attentive to how race and class affected who suffered most, who had power over rebuilding, and whose interests were prioritized as New Orleans tried to recover over the decade after the flood. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, how the book treats Katrina as a long civic crisis rather than a single disaster. Rivlin structures the book around the idea that Hurricane Katrina did not end when the water receded. The storm is the starting point for a longer examination of recovery, institutional failure, and civic reorganization in New Orleans. This matters because the book shifts attention away from immediate spectacle and toward the slower, more consequential process of rebuilding homes, public services, neighborhoods, and political authority. In Rivlin's framing, the decade after the flood reveals as much about the city as the storm itself. Recovery is shown to be uneven, contested, and shaped by choices made long after emergency headlines faded. That approach gives the book its distinctive historical value. It explains disaster not only as an act of nature, but as an extended social condition. By following the aftermath across years, Rivlin shows how crises can persist through housing loss, displacement, bureaucratic delays, and decisions about who is allowed to return, reinvest, and define the city's future. Secondly, race and class as the book's main interpretive lens. A defining feature of the book is its insistence that Katrina exposed pre-existing racial and economic inequalities in New Orleans. Rivlin repeatedly returns to the fact that the hardest hit neighborhoods were disproportionately poor and Black, and he treats that pattern as the product of long-term segregation, underinvestment, and institutional neglect rather than chance. This gives the book a strong analytical core. The flood is not only a natural disaster, but also a magnifier of social hierarchy. The recovery process becomes a test of whose losses are treated as urgent and whose are treated as acceptable collateral damage. Rivlin uses this lens to connect housing, public safety, evacuation, and redevelopment to broader questions of power. The result is a narrative that links local catastrophe to national patterns of racial injustice. Instead of isolating one dramatic failure, the book shows how class and race shaped vulnerability before the storm and continued to shape opportunity after it. Thirdly, a reconstruction of disaster response through reporting, records, and testimony. The book stands out for its method as much as its subject. Rivlin blends firsthand observation with interviews and a wide range of documentary materials, including trial records, newspaper reporting, television footage, and government documents. This approach allows him to move between individual experience and institutional behavior without losing factual density. Rather than relying on a single perspective, he builds a layered account of how the response to Katrina was understood, justified, and contested over time. The method also supports the book's credibility as a work of investigative journalism. It does not merely describe what happened. It explains how different actors documented, denied, or rationalized what happened. That is especially important in a disaster shaped by confusion, political blame, and competing narratives. The book's evidence-based structure helps readers see how public memory of Katrina was formed through official statements, media coverage, and courtroom reckoning, not just through personal trauma or journalistic impression. Fourthly, government failure, political conflict, and the struggle over who controlled recovery. Rivlin pays close attention to the institutions that shaped the post-Katrina landscape, especially city officials, state leaders, federal agencies, and influential civic actors. The book examines the failures of FEMA, the political maneuvering of governors and the president, and the dysfunction surrounding emergency management and rebuilding decisions. This focus matters because it presents recovery as a political process, not a neutral technical one. Decisions about levees, housing, policing, public schools, transportation, and redevelopment were all tied to power. The book therefore asks who had the authority to define the city's future and which populations were expected to bear the costs of that future. By highlighting bureaucratic breakdown and policy conflict, Rivlin shows that disasters are often made worse by weak coordination, ideology, and lack of accountability. The book is not simply critical of incompetence. It is interested in how institutions distribute harm and protection differently across communities during recovery. Lastly, why the book remains useful for understanding urban recovery and public accountability, Although the book is rooted in New Orleans, its relevance extends beyond Katrina itself. Rivlin's account offers a practical framework for thinking about urban disaster recovery, public infrastructure, and long-term civic resilience. Readers interested in city planning, emergency management, racial justice, or public administration can use the book to study how recovery efforts succeed or fail when they are not guided by transparent decision-making and equitable priorities. The book is also valuable because it resists simplified narratives of either triumph or collapse. Instead, it shows recovery as partial, uneven, and politically charged. That realism makes it stronger than books that focus only on the storm's immediate drama. Rivlin's emphasis on how rebuilding choices affect everyday life gives the book lasting importance for policymakers and general readers alike. It argues, implicitly but forcefully, that disaster preparedness cannot begin after the flood. The conditions that determine survival and recovery are built long before the emergency arrives. In conclusion, Katrina After the Flood should be read by anyone interested in hurricane history, New Orleans, urban policy, racial inequality, and the political mechanics of disaster recovery. It is especially useful for readers who want more than a chronology of the storm itself. Rivlin offers a sustained look at how a major American city was reshaped by the interaction of geography, infrastructure, race, class, and government decision-making. The book's value lies in its combination of investigative reporting and long-view analysis. It explains not only what happened during and after Katrina, but why the recovery produced such unequal outcomes. Compared with many disaster books that emphasize immediate heroism or catastrophe, this one is more focused on institutions, consequences, and the slow work of rebuilding. That makes it particularly strong for readers seeking a realistic account of how public systems behave under stress. It stands out because it treats recovery as a decade-long test of civic priorities, revealing that the most important disasters are often those that continue quietly long after the headlines disappear. If you would like to support Gary Rivlin, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.